It's game time. This is The Game on News Radio KMAN.
Man, thank God for that. Good stuff. Thank you for bringing that to us live, Mitch. Was that from CBS News?
No, I just, picked a channel.
Okay,
all right. It's on every channel.
I'm not going to, let's not get ourselves in trouble here. I probably shouldn't have even asked that. I tell you what, and there's no way to easily transition from that into, like, our show. It's just going to be a hard break and a hard transition here. But I have not felt as out of touch as I do today in a long time. And it's because I completely misjudged during our Gene Taylor interview yesterday, like, what it is that you guys care about. We're a show that's here to do, we're here to talk about what you're talking about, talk about what the K-State sports fan is talking about, make it interesting to what the K-State sports fan wants to know about. And we did this interview yesterday, and I thought, man, a lot of pretty good information there from Gene about vaccinations, about, yes, some of football in attendance, and like, hey, we're on track for 100% attendance. And then one nugget that I thought we'd be talking about all day today, and we are going to talk about it, but it was Chris Klieman determining that the knowledge that Gene Taylor says Chris Klieman is going to split up recruiting classes into 15 spots for high school kids and 10 spots for transfers. I think that's fascinating. I think it's a loaded topic. I think whether or not that's best for K-State is a terrific debate. And I thought that would be the takeaway, and everybody would be like, oh, wow. That is not what you guys cared about at all. What you guys care about is your booze. What everybody cares about is their booze and whether or not they can go drink it at their car at halftime at Bill Snyder Family Stadium, or whether you'll be able to enjoy it in your seats for $10 a pop. That's what you care about. And so first of all, let me apologize, because we got the answer from Gene Taylor on what was happening with that, and I didn't ask any follow-up questions. I've since learned in going through all of this and reading what the reaction has been and talking to some people today that it's a pretty layered discussion in and of itself, whether or not there are going to be exit and reentry so you can go out to your car and slam some beers at halftime, or whether or not you'll be able to drink it actually in the stadium at your seat, like general concessions, booze sales. I would have absolutely asked more questions if I realized it was that big of a deal to people. My apologies. So here is the 33 seconds that we do have from Gene Taylor on this topic.
We're going to go with exit and reentry again like we have in the past. All those things that our fans enjoy. We're probably not going to have stadium-wide alcohol sales because we're going to be doing the exit and reentry. But we are going to, create, with the new south end zone, there might be an opportunity to create a kind of a plaza area that we can control, and people can grab a beer inside the stadium, kind of like we do in the Wabash Cannonball area and the North Terrace, but we're still working through some of those things.
It doesn't happen to me very often that I feel very out of touch. This did it to me where I was like, it's been 10 years since I've been a regular fan at a K-State game. I don't go to games enough where I'm not sitting up in a press box. So this didn't register to me as a big deal. This is what I will say on the topic. I think if you're somebody that is staunchly in support of exit reentry, you want to be able to go out to your car at halftime of the games, enjoy it while it lasts. I would just enjoy it while it lasts, because you are incredibly fortunate on a relative scale, relative to the rest of not just college football, but like entertainment events in general. You are so lucky that you're basically being grandfathered in right now with this policy. I mean, where else do you go that you can leave the event, go out to your car, drink some Natterdays, and then go back in? It's pretty much nowhere. I mean, that is not like a common thing. And actual alcohol sales in stadiums, like, it's skyrocketing how many places are doing that because it's just untapped revenue. I mean, it's just free money, basically. I was looking at figures from 2019. I mean, 2 years ago, 60% of FBS football teams were allowing alcohol sales, like general concession alcohol sales in the stadium. So that number is increasing rapidly, and it's going in one direction. I use this analogy all the time, but the boulder of progress is a-coming, and you can stand in front of the boulder as it's rolling down the mountain and provide some level of resistance. You can slow it down. You could knock it off course for a little bit, but you're never stopping the boulder. It's eventually moving. That's where I think this is all going. I would imagine that a lot of the calculus here is, okay, we just are getting out of the pandemic. How many fans are going to actually be coming back to the stadium, to games on a regular basis right now because of either A, still a little bit leery about the virus, or B, that was the excuse that you needed to realize, like, hey, I can sit at home and just drink and chill, and this is better. So you don't want to disincentivize fans from going to the games. And what I do believe is that there's been a lot of surveying done, and that it came back pretty strongly, most people weighing in, like, that they still want this. So for a year, it's like, well, we don't want to be turning folks away. We can't have this be like the inflection point where everybody realized during the pandemic, like, do I really need to be going to the games? And there's like a significant portion or amount of people that said, like, this may be the tipping point here. I'm not going to start coming back. And so you start doing the calculus and say, like, okay, let's give that to them this year. We've already tested alcohol sales, general concessions at Bill Snyder Family Stadium during the pandemic. We do it at Bramlage. We do it at Toynton. We all know where this is going, but let's reevaluate for sure next year and see what's going to happen. I would guess that's where this is. So celebrate it for now, but don't get too comfortable. Don't get too comfortable is what I would tell the exit and reentry crowd. It's my message to you.
The way I was out of touch is, you know, I tweeted out all the info once Gene said it, and I remember us talking about it last year.
Well, first of all, you were way less out of touch about it than I was because you thought to tweet it, and I didn't think it was that big of a deal.
Well, that's actually usually like out of my realm. I usually don't tweet stuff out right away. I'm just not really that great with social media and thinking the first thing, oh, I need to tweet it out as soon as I hear something. But anyway, what we're getting at here, what I'm getting at here is, I remember us talking about it. It was a pretty split crowd, I thought, when we got the, like, kind of a general vote or assumption of what people thought was the right thing to do, either keep reentry or go to stadium-wide alcohol sales. It was a pretty split crowd, but I thought it favored more on the reentry. I think that was at the time, you know, people just, you know, that's what they're used to. They could just easily go out because K-State and Bill Snyder Family Stadium have one of the best when it comes to access from parking lot to stadium. It's so easy to walk out to one of the paid parking lots and go out to your tailgate because you're just steps away. It's really not that far of a walk. It is if you're in the one of the grass lots. But when I tweeted it out and I started getting reactions from it, it was very negative. It was a very negative response that people wanted the alcohol sales inside the stadium. I'm not a fan of the whole beer garden thing. I feel like it's just, in a way, it's like time out for those that want to have a beer. They just put them in a pin. You stay there. You stay in your pin. You can't watch the game with your beer. You're just basically stuck if you really want to enjoy a beverage inside of the stadium. Obviously, you're just, they're not going to do both. That doesn't make sense when it comes to, you know, money standards. But
yes, we'll break that down. I think there are a couple of reasons why both is a long shot. At least there is the beer garden option if you're somebody that just really wants it. But look, I'll say it. It's my show. I'm supposed to give you my opinion. I think what matters more to all of you is that I would say I don't think this is something that's going to be a long-term deal. Like, the tide has turned on all of this, and times are changing. And with change, like, you know, people will be upset. But I think eventually you're going to see that go away. But if you want my opinion, even if I were a fan, I'd sacrifice 20 minutes of slamming Natterdays at the tailgate to take in seven figures potentially of revenue so that we can hire more football support staff. Taylor Brandt can get some help. We can get better recruits in here. I mean, it's much like, to me, the East Side parking spots thing for a practice facility. Like, I know there's a convenience factor there that sucks, but, like, think about, do you want a modern football program? Do you want a better program that will bring you more joy in coming to the games and being a part of it long-term? I just think you have to think long-term as opposed to short-term there. Like, it's honestly, if you remove yourself like I am removed from being just like the typical fan that's going to be there every game, it's a slam dunk. You sell booze in the stadium, and you don't let people go back out. The atmosphere in the stadium is lifeless in the third quarter. How much pride do people around here take in what kind of a raucous environment this is? We love the Art Briles quote about walk your ass into Manhattan, Kansas if you think you've ever heard a place that's loud, or I don't know, I'm paraphrasing. It was something like that. We all love that and take pride in it, but what's missing from that is like that there's an asterisk on that, and it's like for maybe 2.5 quarters, it's pretty loud. But in the third, it's not, because like students don't come back, and not just students, but predominantly students, like they're not coming back, and people aren't in the stadium because they're chilling out, hanging out, drinking the Natterdays at the tailgate. So you're forfeiting potentially 7 figures in revenue and lessening your atmosphere. I mean, come on. Like, it's pretty clear to me, like, what the actual big picture better solution here is. It's just about the fan wanting the convenience factor. And for this year, you win. You win. So, I mean, that's where I'm at on this. I'm not overly passionate about any of it, if I'm being really honest with you, but I know so many of you are. So, I mean, if you are, at J.O. Kurtz on Twitter, at the game KMAN on Twitter, 537-1350. I know we don't take a lot of calls. I suppose on this we could take some calls, because I've been pretty surprised by how strong, like Mitch said, the reaction was on both sides of this thing.
I'm passionate about it. I think I would, in my opinion, get rid of the reentry and alcohol sales in the stadium. It's going to benefit the university a lot more. And we're talking about the gates to the parking lot open 5 hours prior to kickoff. Can you not get enough drinking in at that time? Keep your buzz going in the stadium. Don't be cheap. All right. It's, you know, going out for halftime, you're going to end up talking yourself into not even coming back into the game because you just want to hang out. And for those that want to, you know, they're talking about giving up their spots in the parking lot because they can't go back out for 10, 15 minutes and chug a beer. I mean, let's start thinking about if we support this team or not.
Yeah, I saw a little bit of that. Like, oh, if you took that away, I mean, I pay $1,000 to get my parking spot, and if you take that halftime away from me, I would call your bluff on that. I would 100% call your bluff on that. Now, K-State is choosing basically not to here. I would call your bluff on that. You're really permanently going to give up coming to the games, having the 5 hours beforehand, having a couple hours after that you can be in the parking lot hanging out because you can't get your 20, 30, 40 minutes and then debate whether or not you want to come back in the third quarter. I'd call your bluff. I don't think you'll do that. I don't think you'll do that. And I don't think most people would. So, look, I'm not throwing a fit about what the decision is right now, especially because I think I know where this is headed eventually, because it's where the whole world is headed. But, you know, for right now, just enjoy it while you can if you're somebody that's in that category.
I mean, if your whole goal is to go to a game to tailgate and drink, I mean, I get the atmosphere is cool to be there at tailgate, but I mean, just save yourself some money and just barbecue at your house. You know, when it's warm out, set a TV up outside.
Well, that, I mean,
set up a tent.
Well, what you're doing is exactly, I mean, that's what K-State, I think, is fearful of right now. Well, they don't want that to be happening. I just don't think that taking away 30 minutes from you at halftime, I don't think that's going to be the tipping point for enough people to really, truly matter. But hey, play it safe this year coming off the pandemic. Make sure you get people back. Go from there. I don't think it'll be a massive, massive deal. If you're passionate about it, though, I would like to hear from you.
If that's the breaking point, then again, we need to start thinking about ourselves and, if you know, where our support is for the university at that point.
All right, here's what matters far more to me from the Gene Taylor interview coming up next. Oh, don't you worry. We'll talk much more about your booze here throughout the show. At J.L. Kurtz, at the game, KMAN. Gene Taylor said yesterday, no general concession alcohol sales in the stadium likely this year. but that exit and reentry will continue for now. I just say don't get too used to that. I'll try and put myself in a fan's shoes as well later on, because I'm just not there, as I've made clear to you guys. But what I thought would be the interesting talking point, and to me it still is, the far more interesting thing to come out of the interview yesterday, was Gene Taylor dropping some knowledge about how many scholarships Chris Klieman is going to be saving for transfers every year.
I think coaches are going to learn to adjust and recruit differently. I think I maybe mentioned it to you guys or somewhere where, you know, when I talk to Coach Klieman, he's got 25 scholarships. He's probably going to hold 15 for high school kids and 10 for the transfer portal.
Sounds like a very jarring number when you first hear it. That's 40% of a recruiting class for just transfers. But I would just remind you, like, how we just went through this. K-State had 11 players leave, and by the end of it, that was middle of the pack in the Big 12. It's a lot of players from each school. That's over the 10 that we're talking about here holding back for transfers. And it does not appear to be moving any slower. Like, now the legislation's actually official. That was before the legislation was even official. Now it's, like, well on it. Not even totally official, but basically official. That's going to be the precedent set now moving forward. So that's not as jarring a number as you would think. And not only did K-State have double digits leave, but there's already six that have come in. I mean, they've had six transfers this year. And that's been basically the biggest talking point of spring, is how encouraged they are by these transfers that they have, particularly on the defensive side of the ball. So that's four more. And right now, by the way, I would bet, what's the phrase, like dollars to donuts? I don't even know what that means. But I'd bet it on them having at least one or two more transfers by the time the season starts. They're still actively looking. So you're going to end up with seven or eight transfers in and like 11 or 12 out, depending on how you're counting some guys like Nick Ost. 11 or 12 out, seven or eight in already this year. Makes perfect sense that that's how you would divvy things up. Some other motivations that might be at play. I think that there's a crowd that really hopes that the 25 number will be upped because of this, so as to not screw over high school kids as much, that you would have way less spots for high school kids. Maybe that's a part of this too, trying to posture and position for that, but it's not like it was Chris Klieman that said it. It was Gene Taylor that said it about Chris Klieman. So that takes away some of my suspicion that there would be that at play. I think that's legit. I think that's a real number, and I think that's the strategy that's going to happen. Makes perfect sense. Chris Klieman knows that he's going to have to be good at this. He's going to have to be good at the portal. Because, first of all, basically everybody is. Like that's going to be the new coach that rises up. The younger generation of coaches, Roy Williams, Bruce Weber, the older coaches, they can whine all they want about it, but you have to be able to play the game. Teach me the rules, I'll play the game. Here are the rules now. Transfers are a big part of this. Klieman always seems to see the big picture. Like in the style that he coaches the way that you need to coach kids in 2021. He's not the old school militaristic, basically Bill Snyder philosophy of being a coach. Like that's, or Bob Knight. Like that just doesn't fly with kids in 2021. He understands that. He understands the need to get somebody in that can really relate to kids. I think that was a big factor in hiring Tremaine Carroll, the new strength and conditioning coach that they have now. He knows that the players want to have a part in the music and the hype videos, and that all of that stuff matters, and uniforms, and it's cool to the players, and they want that kind of thing. Like this is the way that he thinks. So it does not shock me at all that he looks at this and says, well, I'm going to have to be good in the portal. I'm going to have to be good at this. And it hits differently when you've experienced it already. When, like, you can see, if you're a coach, you can look at the landscape right now and be like, well, there's 2,000 kids in the transfer portal. Like, we're going to have to utilize this. That's talent sitting out there, and we're going to have kids leaving. But it's also much different when you have it hit inside your home as deeply as it did. K-State had 11 players leaving, with most of that happening, like, in season. And Klieman's sitting here having to talk about, like, accountability and culture problems, and that's not fun. Nobody wants to do that. That will resonate with you. I mean, it's like you can sit here and say, like, I understand that cancer is bad. I understand that cancer destroys a lot of people's lives. but it will register differently for you if it hits someone in your family or if you get it. It's much different. Well, Kleiman's experienced that. So, like, this makes perfect sense to me that he would look at that and be like, well, I've seen firsthand what exactly this can do, and I need to be replenishing guys, and this is clearly bigger picture where the game's going, and I'm the type of guy that understands these things. So I really, upon giving it some more thought, it's not a shocking number at all to me, 10. It's just not.
It could be a lot more. It depends on, you know, year in and year out, because the transfer portal is now college athletics. It's not just football that focuses on that. I mean, Mike DeBeanie, Coach Fritz, Pete Hughes, Jeff Mitty, Bruce Weber. I mean, they all have to think about the transfer portal now, because who knows who's going to be in and out of this every single year. It's now to the point where high school recruiting isn't the most important recruiting anymore. It might be the transfer portal. It might be even easier to recruit out of the transfer portal. I don't know. But the way there's so much traffic now these days in that portal, you have no choice, I think, but to jump in and try to snag some guys. That might be the best route these days to find the players that want to play in your program.
Well, I don't – what's more important these days, high school or portal recruiting, especially if you're going to be more of a development-style program? I mean, it still is going to be very important to recruit high school kids. But I understand the point that you're making. I guess I would still say at K-State, I mean, the high school recruiting needs to get better, and that still is going to be a big part of this. But you can sprinkle in – like, I think this doesn't get talked about enough, especially with the crowd that would really recoil at the idea of what the transfer portal is becoming. But Bill Snyder, like Snyder 2.0, a Big 12 championship does not happen without transfers. Arthur Brown was the Big 12 Defensive Player of the Year. He was a transfer from Miami. Chris Harper was a massive part of the offense that desperately needed playmaking ability at wide receiver. Chris Harper was a transfer from Oregon. Like, those were high-end talents that K-State would not be able to pull in from the high school ranks because four-star, five-star, but yet they got them on the transfer market. Like, even Bill Snyder 2.0 saw the value in that and understood that. And that's how you can sprinkle in, like, some major talent that you may not be able to get at the high school level. So the high school stuff is still important, but if you want to get upper echelon kids, like, this is a way to go above your pay grade, so to speak. This is a way to outkick your coverage. You know, I mean, you see a guy walking down the street, like, man, that dude really outkicked his coverage. Like, what is she doing with him? Well, that's how you can make that happen now. It's through the portal, and it's easier to do that than high school recruiting.
Well, unless you're going after the four- and five-star guys. I mean, to use an example here, K-State had tied in the last, now, including this year, last couple of years, your starter's going to most likely be a transfer with a year left. You know, Briley Moore, we saw how big that was, but, I mean, if you think about it, when it comes to playmakers, who is most likely going to get that starting job? Is it going to be the guy that has many years of college football experience? Or is it going to be somebody coming out of the, you know, out of you know, some high school somewhere that doesn't have any college experience, but does have a star rating? You know, somebody that you could catch your attention just by the offer list he has, how many stars he has, and how good he was in high school. Most likely, it's going to be, obviously, the transfer portal guy is going to come in and take a spot. You can find the guys that have the experience at the college level. They're going to be the biggest difference makers in recruiting anymore. It's in my opinion, the transfer portal has taken a step ahead of just bringing in fresh guys out of high school.
You still need a foundation, and most of your foundation, I think, will still have to come from the high school ranks. But at a place like K-State, the real significance here of the transfer portal is, like, that's a way to pluck higher-end talent that you normally wouldn't be able to get. Why can't there be both booze in the stadium and the exit and re-entry? It is pretty simple. We'll talk about it next. So this is a perfect encapsulation of the battle being waged here between those who would rather see alcohol sold at the stadium and those who would rather have the exit and re-entry policy. If you missed it, Gene Taylor yesterday said likely going to just be exit and re-entry with no general alcohol sales in the stadium. So Jeff Great dude, by the way, and I understand what he's saying. He says, I understand the convenience factor, and he is referencing being able to drink in the stadium. But I have to believe that will drastically change when we go from less than 10K to 45 to 50K in the stands, and novelty will wear off. No problem going out at halftime to get something I bought instead of being gouged for a domestic. So, I mean, basically, that's what you have here. Like, people saying, like, I'd rather go out and sneak a few beers out of my car than pay the $8 for a beer in stadium. And then Wildcat Photography, another account that I like, tweets a lot, says, with the bag policy limits, I would appreciate the ability to go to my car and slather sunblock on my pale blank instead of carrying it in with me. Now, you're speaking to my heart, Wildcat Photography, because I am about as pale as it gets, and I sunburn worse than about anybody in America. But, like, can you sacrifice the bag for seven figures for the athletic department? Can you sacrifice the bag for the bag, as the kids would say, so the athletic department can secure the bag? If it means you add two recruiting support staffers because you take your sunblock in a bag, isn't that a sacrifice that you could get behind making? Like, that's, or if it means the difference between you paying $16 at the concession stand versus the athletic department taking in that money and making the program better. And that's the battle that you have. And I understand thinking about short-term benefit and not paying $16 for two beers at the game. I do get it. But this is where I think the athletic department eventually will and has to see the bigger picture here. That, like, hey, if we're going to make a viable program that gets people coming back and they want to come back, that's what we're going to have to do. Now, why can't you have both? That's the thing that I've seen on Twitter from a bunch of people. Response I get, like, I asked the question, and you can weigh in at JL Kurtz on Twitter, which would you rather have? And it's like, why not both? Why not both? Why not both? I think there are two things here pretty clearly. Now, I don't know the specifics on, like from an insurance standpoint, if that gets more difficult, if it gets trickier. I would imagine there are some hangups there for having general booze in the stadium. But I think there's just a desire to, one, from a culpability standpoint, like an environment standpoint, not have people drinking 5 hours beforehand, coming in, still drinking in the game, then going out at halftime, then coming back and still getting more beers. Like, it's just, I think there's a worry there about what that can do to the atmosphere. And the other part is, like, if you're talking about the vendor trying to sell booze, they're not going to be real thrilled about, like, hey, Jeff can go out to his car and get a Natterday at halftime as opposed to stay in and pay $8 for a Bud Light in here. They're not going to be thrilled about that. And then you as a university, you're handicapping yourself, too, with the amount of money that you're bringing in. So I'm talking about, like, I keep referencing LSU made $2.2 million from selling booze in a year. Now, that's a massive stadium that's twice the size of what you have here, but we're still talking about potentially pushing seven figures in revenue. You're handicapping yourself in the revenue that you can get just to appease fans that have been grandfathered in on something that's honestly very antiquated. So it'll hurt some feelings, but I would imagine eventually when this does happen, it's not going to be that big of a deal long term. And because of those two things, I don't think you're ever going to see both. I think that's a pipe dream, and I think it honestly kind of undercuts the idea here to me of what the advantage is. We're talking about revenue. Like, so many people will complain until the cows come home about, well, K-State's cheap, or they won't do this, they won't spend this money on this. You're depriving them of a revenue source that's just free money if you're saying, I need my exit and re-entry. You can't have your cake and eat it too. So then don't be the person that's going to complain about that when they don't have an extra, you know, $400,000 lying around to hire five recruiting staffers. It's just, there's some give and take there.
Well, and what I'll add to that, because I agree with everything, and I'm definitely, I mentioned earlier, I am one for getting rid of re-entry and having the stadium-wide alcohol sales. Revenue is a big part of that, and also this could very well happen. I don't know if it happened this past season, but, you know, for instance, Budweiser, if you start selling their beer in the stadium every year, they are more likely to even spend more money on you to push their product, as in stadium advertising. They're going to throw more advertising into during games or radio advertisements. You're going to hear more on Learfield IMG College because Budweiser, their product is now in Bill Snyder Family Stadium. They want Wildcat fans drinking that beer. That's even more money, and really it's free money. Like, you hardly have to do any work besides sell their beer in the stadium, and you're getting a lot more money from that.
Right. I think that's an important point. Yes. The, like, costs associated with it and the effort associated with it, it's pretty low because they're already doing some of it. And Gene did say in that clip, it sounds like the southeast corner may turn into a place where it can be basically like a beer garden. You can still, I mean, they have it certain places already. It would not be that big of a deal. Not much effort, bringing in a lot of money. Everybody would do the same. If there was something you could do that would not take much effort and generate you a lot of free money, most everybody is going to do that. And that's why it will happen. It will happen. I remain very convinced it will happen. It just doesn't sound like it's going to be this year. Mitch has a number one song of the day for us coming up next. Candyman.
Sweet chocolate, malt, candy, gumdrops, anything you want. You've come to the right man because I'm the candy man.
Who can take a sunrise?
Why was this played on the radio?
You know, it wasn't too long ago you were all about this song because of Joe Klanderman.
I know. Did we ever find my version of that? The candy man.
Are you asking yourself that question?
Well, you know, I mean, we talked about it, and the way you then re-referenced it here, I thought maybe you had gone and looked.
No, I didn't.
My apologies for assuming that.
Well, this is from 1972, The Candyman by Sammy Davis Jr., 3 weeks at number one, an American singer, dancer, actor, vaudevillian, and comedian from New York City. Tip of the cap for Sammy Davis Jr., a member of the Rat Pack, an informal group of entertainers who appeared together in Las Vegas casino venues, and they originated as a group of A-list show business friends who met casually at the L.A. home of Humphrey Bogart. The group featured Frank Sinatra, Dean Martin, Joey Bishop, Peter Lawford, and, of course, Sammy Davis Jr., among others as well. But those were the main guys, especially Sammy Davis Jr., Dean Martin, and Frank Sinatra. But Sammy Davis Jr.'s popularity actually helped him break the race barrier of the segregated entertainment industry. He did, however, have a complex relationship with the black community because he drew criticism after publicly supporting President Richard Nixon in 1972. But he did receive a Kennedy Center Honors in 1987.
And that worked out well.
And yeah, Nixon. And in 2001, posthumously awarded with a Grammy Lifetime Achievement Award. Now get this, Sammy Davis Jr., 51 albums, 10 top 40 hits, but this was his only number one. From the album in 1972, Sammy Davis Jr. Now, where the Candyman originated from is, John, I'm curious to know if you've ever seen this movie.
Found it.
But the Candyman originally appeared in the 1971 film Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory, starring Gene Wilder.
You know, I like, if you would have asked me for a guess, I probably would have guessed that. I mean, for the obvious reasons, like he's talking about candy, but it also just seems like it really fits that vibe. I feel like I can see Gene Wilder singing this thing.
Well, the movie is based off a book, Charlie and the Chocolate Factory. If you're a fan of The Office, you should know that piece of history. It contained lyrics adapted from other songs in the film, but the book had nothing to do with any lyrics that had to do with a song called The Candyman. The soundtrack version was a song sang by Aubrey Woods, who played Bill, the candy store owner, in the film.
Not really.
Not blown away by that?
No,
okay.
I'm not.
Let's see. What else do we have? Do you want to play your version?
I do. I think this version's a lot better.
Who can take a sunrise, sprinkle it with dew, cover it in chocolate and a miracle or two?
The Clandy Man can.
Who can take a rainbow, wrap it in a sigh, soak it in the sun and make a strawberry lemon pie?
The Clandy Man.
The Clandy Man. The Clandy Man can.
Beautiful. Well, I guess some more on Sammy here. He didn't like the song at first, but decided to do it anyway. He thought it'd be the biggest mistake in his career. Turned out to be the biggest song of his career, as he recorded the song in two takes and then headed off to Vietnam to entertain the troops. But he said, quote, "This record is going straight into the toilet, not just around the rim, but into the bowl, and it may just pull my whole career down with it." That was a quote to Mojo magazine. But he received a Grammy nomination for Best Pop Vocal Performance at the 15th Annual Grammys for that song.
Why do people like it that much? Why is that considered to be a Grammy-worthy song?
I'm sure they piggybacked off the success of the movie, and Sammy Davis Jr. was a huge deal back then. So combine the two, and you got a hit.
But, people were just, bumping that on their record player?
Oh, yeah, John.
Is just spinning that? Hey, it's April 20th. It's 420, man. Let's go get high and listen to the Candyman. Maybe that sounds like a go. Maybe that's what I'll do tonight.